Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the War Room. You got Dev, Q, Jimmy, PJ, and B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
Give it to you how you want it in a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level. Bold with them topics, sort of like some rebels. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five door on primetime. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. From sports medicine to sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war ain't Kuwait. It's the War Room with five nights at the round table. Five Philly guys diversified and educated.
Football fans, and welcome back to a special edition of your favorite show. You are once again live in the War Room for our fourth annual Super Bowl pregame tailgate. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm broadcasting live from my log cabin atop the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia with my partners Jimmy the Blueprint Williams. We got PJ Paul Johnson in the house, and B. Austin to join us in a couple of minutes. The big game is a few hours away, and it's time for our final thoughts. But before we do, make sure you join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to get into the Super Bowl 48 conversation. You can also call us directly on the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Fellas, that NFL season comes to an end tonight. What are you feeling on that?
I mean, look.
Man, I'm hyped. I'm hyped for the game. You know, the love of the NFL game. I dropped out
high ceiling, bro.
It hurts, man. It hurts me that it's over. Like, I love nothing like watching football on Sunday, man. And this is the last one, so I'm going to try to take it all in. But I'm hurting that the season is over.
You hurting me? No, I mean, you know, for me, it's bittersweet because you get to watch.
It depends on how it ends for Jimmy.
Yeah. I'm very confident right now, man. That could be a good or a bad thing, man. RIP to Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That's the whole last.
Yeah, I know, right? That's crazy.
Yo, who is that and what is he saying?
He also needs, I don't know what's up with your microphone. You got to speak up a little bit, my brother. but anyway, you know, let's go ahead and get into the rundown, Jimmy.
Get this pregame
tailgate underway because we got a lot of food out here that I'm waiting to get at. So
let's get the tailgate started. Absolutely, man. The first thing we're going to talk about is the NFL Honors, which is brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including an NFL Sunday ticket, go to warroomsports.com and click on the DirecTV logo. You know, you get a special discount, and who doesn't like the hookup? But before we talk about the Super Bowl, let's talk about some awards. I want to know if you guys agree with these picks, and if not, who should have won? And the first one being the comeback player of the year, which went to Phillip Rivers. What do you think about that?
Phillip Rivers, you know, when we did our awards, Phillip Rivers is actually my pick anyway, so of course I think they were spot on with this selection. Jimmy always says it, man. He said Phillip Rivers went from top 10 to not mentioned at all. And he came out this season like gangbusters and got his name back into that top 10 mix. So shout out to Phillip Rivers. I think they made a good choice right there.
Okay, what about the rest of you? I felt like
they didn't go wrong. I mean, I was cool with Phillip Rivers getting it. My pick was Brett Grimes, but I'm not mad. Phillip Rivers got it. Obviously, he plays the premier position, the quarterback position. So with him going from being an interception machine over the last few years to really stepping back onto that stage as a premier top 10, top 8 quarterback. You know, it was almost a given that he would get it over anybody else because there wasn't any huge comeback stories in the league. I think Brent Grimes went under the radar because that team was 8-8 and they had the whole Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin thing going on down there in Dolphin Land. But, you know, shout out to Phillip Rivers. I'm not mad.
Yo, man, Brent Grimes, was he even mentioned for this award other than by you, B. Austin?
Yeah, he was mentioned. I want to point out that he blew his leg out, came back, played the corner position, was all pro, went to the Pro Bowl, had 5 picks, and led that Dolphins defense. So, yeah, like, don't ever question my, you know what I mean?
I ain't questioning you. I'm just saying.
Was he all pro or was he a Pro Bowler?
He was all pro. He was all pressure.
I think the difference is, of course, you know how everybody reveres the quarterback position.
Right,
so, you know,
exactly.
Phillip Rivers having the ball in his hand every offensive play and actually making the playoffs. See, that's where the Dolphins
mm-hmm.
fell off and didn't have any success. So I think that's what bolted him.
Oh, yeah. No,
I
definitely acknowledge him playing the quarterback position easily puts them in the front running for that. And then also that whole distraction down there in Dolphins land kind of overshadowed what Brent Grimes was able to accomplish.
Exactly. You know,
it is, though.
Anybody else you think should have got mentioned, you know, along the lines of those awards?
I'm cool.
Well, Peyton Manning should be up for all awards.
No doubt. All right, well, this one right here, y'all may not really care too much about, but you may. Defensive Rookie of the Year went to Sheldon Richardson.
His name was mentioned.
Everybody, he was like sort of like the favorite to win it, but he did win it. Any thoughts?
He's a beast against the run. I just want to point that out. I mean, he's a certified animal. But, again, that's one of those situations where because the Jets aren't really a good team, he doesn't get a lot of acclaim, and they're more interested in looking at how many interceptions Geno Smith throws than anything else on that team.
Yeah, this is true. Any other thoughts, gentlemen?
Yeah, to get his Geno gigging.
I know. He hates black people.
I hate all people.
I'm joking. I'm messing with you, bro. Yo, but all right, well, let's move on there. Nothing to be said about him. How about this one, though? Eddie Lacy, Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Deserved.
Another one of my picks. I'm 3-for-3 so far on this one.
3-for-3.
Like
Eddie Lacy.
That's right, PJ. No, I was just going to say, yeah, I think Eddie Lacy deserves, man. I think he brought an extra dimension to that offense, too. You know, that's one thing that the Packers never really had was a consistent running game. And I think with him and what he did this year going forward, I think it's only going to be, you know, even make them a more formidable team on offense, even with the great Aaron, but now having somebody to hand it to that wants to run through brick walls. I think that's going to
I agree with that because even when they won the championship, they had like Edgar Bennett who was, you know, average. So they've never really had a very strong.
Those
Starks,
exactly
Starks was here when he won last time. I mean, Starks and Edgar Bennett, I mean, but they've never really had, like, a feature back.
Yeah, I mean, those were my thoughts exactly when I made the pick. I was kind of thinking, you know, thinking along the lines of the dimension he brought. And, you know, he was really important to that offense. You know, when Aaron Rodgers went down, they still had to lean on Eddie Lacy when he was healthy, you know, to keep that team afloat while he was gone. So I think he definitely brings an important dimension so Aaron Rodgers doesn't have to be Superman every single play.
I agree. I mean, because if not for him playing the Joe Clark role while the ball was hurt, they wouldn't have made the playoffs at all.
I mean, I don't have any – y'all covered everything with Eddie Lacy. He was my pick. You know, but shout out to Amon Green, man. Humble man. But they had Amon Green.
Yo, they did, but Amon Green still, like, he had, like, that one great season, and then, like, you know, I guess it was injury.
No, he had a battle. He actually had to battle with cowardice. Like, he was definitely, he faced a lot of
battle with
cowardice.
All right, well, anyway, let's move on. A battle with cowardice. Killed the bull. Let's talk about the coach of the year, which is Riverboat Ron Rivera from the had a great season. This was the most competitive to me award out of all the different awards. There were a lot of people that could have won this award, but Riverboat Ron won. What are your thoughts on this?
When we did the episode of Field Vision, where we did our picks with the fellows from sports-kings.com, you know, Riverboat Ron's name came up a lot. A lot of us were giving him shout-outs but not actually picking him. I think one or two guys actually picked him as their coach of the year. I was shocked to see that Andy Reid didn't win it. Like, my biggest thing with him was going from 2-14 to 11-5, and I thought that was the most impressive job. But, yeah, definitely shout out to Ron Rivera, because if anybody else deserved it, it would be him.
I had a problem with this pick. It's not so much a knock against Ron Rivera. I think that he did a bang-up job especially going from what were they, 0-3 to start the season to ending up, you know, 11-5 or 12-4, making the playoffs. With, you know, he did an outstanding job. But as Devin mentioned, Andy Reid took a team out of the pit of the unfortunate and made it relevant with a guy that everyone believes is nothing more than a game manager at quarterback, put players in positions to win, and changed an entire culture of a franchise. I mean, they had players killing themselves literally like last season, and now they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I don't see how Andy Reid doesn't win that award. Like, I just don't. I don't
think about what they would be if Denver wasn't in their division.
Yeah, I get all that. But I think it was a lot of worthy people for this award. I mean, you know, I thought Andy was a front runner, but there were several coaches who could have got this award. But go ahead, though.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with you. But I don't know.
Anyway, man.
Just the simple fact that they only had 2 wins last year, I think that's why a lot of people assumed it was. I mean, that's why I would, you know, assuming as well it was going to be Andy. Just from, if nothing else, I mean, I know they had the early playoff exit, but from the regular season standpoint, it was like, I mean, you bring a team that had 2 wins. I mean,
yeah, this is true. I mean,
Alex Smith.
People like to point at the fact that they had all stars, but they had 2 wins. You know, like that's 1-2. That's like less than 3. That's great.
With a lot of the same players.
That's like less than 3.
Less than 3, but greater than 1. Yo, it's 2. Yo, 2 just sounds worse than 1 because that means 2 sounds like you really was out there trying though. Anyway,
if it was 1, you could have said they just gave up, but 2 means
that you actually tried.
Shout out to Kensington High because we beat them by almost 60 points back in high school. I just wanted to say that. That ain't got nothing to do with the conversation.
Nice. Yeah. All right.
Word up.
I'm just finding that information out. So I'm proud about that. Let's talk about the
defensive player of the year. This is B. Austin's homie, Luke Kuechly, a.k.a. Luke Karaoke. I think it's well-deserved. I don't think you really could have given it to anybody else. But what do you guys think?
I think you could have given it to somebody else, but this is the one. Like, I didn't pick him, but he was a strong contender on my list because my list was basically like a 3-way tie between Kuechly, Robert Mathis, and J.J. Watt. So I just had to take into account of what each person did and what their team did. J.J. Watt's team is trash, so I kind of eliminated him from the pile. So it was between Mathis and Kuechly, and I picked Mathis because, you know, 19.5 sacks. He did a lot to help out that defense, a lot of strip sacks, about 9 of them. So I went with him, but I'm not mad at all that Luke Kuechly won the award.
I'm being honest,
we've been praising him all year. Karaoke is that dude.
I could never get an award to Robert Mathis because he's a black man without facial hair, and he can't be trusted, nor would he win an award in my book. So
DJ Armstrong-ass dude.
Yeah, he one of them dudes.
I kind of, along with the reason that Jimmy just stated as to why I couldn't give it to Mathis, like, I respect the season that Mathis has had, and to put it into context, after he's been in the league as long as he has, to put up this type of season and those type of numbers at 32 years old, I probably think that it could have and should have even been a tie between Luke Karaoke and Mathis, but we don't go with ties here on War Room Sports, so I chose Luke Karaoke because Luke Karaoke was in on every play, both on offense, defense, and special teams. He had every tackle in the world this season, so I had to give
it
to him.
He might make a couple plays tonight. I don't know how, but
he might be in the Super Bowl. Dude was in on every tackle everywhere in the world.
Yes. Now, Luke, he was involved in every play. He's one of those types of players that has a nose for the rock. Like, every play he was in on, from tackles.
Yeah, that's drawn.
I mean,
so
he was always, you know, the play was always mentioned in the play. I'm like, boy, is that he covered a lot of
stuff. He sounded like a young Brian Urlacher. That's what he used to be.
Luke Karaoke
is drawn because when you make a play 40 yards down the field as a middle linebacker, like, what are you doing down?
He had a lot of range, man. To me, he didn't even look like it, but he had so much range at that position. It was like, yo, just like Austin said, I mean, 40 yards downfield, coming in to defend a seam route or something, I'm like, yo, what is Luke Kuechly doing down there?
Man, from our culture as Eagles fans, we're used to Jeremiah Trotter. He had a hard time going 5 yards to the left and 5 yards to the right. So it's like,
he's only downhill and nothing in that.
Slide to the right. All right, let's talk about the offensive player of the year. Peyton Manning, of course, wins offensive player of the year. He had to be the favorite, and he wrapped up that award. As a matter of fact, let's just combine him. He won offensive player of the year and MVP.
Yeah.
Of course, you guys, I personally have no problem with that, as long as he caps it off with what he should cap it off with. But what do you guys think about that?
It's amazing.
Let me ask you, if he loses tonight, do you think he doesn't deserve it?
He's got to give me a rumble. It's just that simple. Like, if he loses, if we lose, and it's anywhere remotely his fault, we got to square up.
How are we going to see the
yo, I love it, yo. I love you.
Yo, what if he balls out? What if he balls out and it's somebody else's fault?
Now listen. He may get a pass, maybe not, but it depends. It depends on how the game goes.
You got to look in his eyes, right? Jim, you got to see his eyes.
I
got to
see. If he's out there playing his heart out, and he's not looking scared of anything, then, you know.
He's not dry heaving in the huddle.
Yeah. I just don't need him.
I have no value to add to this dialogue because I think that Peyton should have won all the awards that we've mentioned, like even the defensive award. So,
standing.
I'm unabashed.
But truthfully, yo, this is really impressive because this is his fifth award. Nobody's, of course, you know, it's a record. Nobody's ever won the award more than three times, including Jimmy's other favorite, Brett Favre. He won it three times. Peyton is also the first player to win the award, the MVP award, that is, on two different teams. And he could tonight end up being the first quarterback to win the Super Bowl on two different teams. So, you know, a lot of people try to tie this game to his legacy. You know, I don't think it would do any damage to his legacy if he loses, but I think he has a lot to gain as far as history and the record books are concerned.
Yeah, I totally agree because at the end of the day, with the season he had and winning these awards, if he caps it off with the title and then adding to the fact of the two teams that, you know, he's won the MVP for, two teams that he's taken to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl, but he's starting to, like, you know, put together those pieces. Because like I always say, there's not one greatest quarterback, in my opinion, but there's a handful of people. But when you get into the arguments, you start bringing down awards and things like that. He's just adding to that argument. Like, you know,
for argument's sake, because, you know, everybody always wants to solidly name somebody. And, you know, you guys know I've been afraid to actually jump out there with that for a long time. But I'm going to go ahead and go on record now, man. I think this dude is the greatest quarterback who's ever played in the NFL.
For me, I won't say that just because, like, you know, I'm going to be completely honest. Even in basketball, I don't think there's one greatest player. In football, there's not one greatest quarterback. I just think there's always going to be, with the exception of Jerry Rice, who just, like, far and away. Outside of him, there's always going to be an argument in every position, in every sport. Like, so I think he's in that mix with the Marinos and with the Elways, with the Montanas. And they all have their arguments that can be made. But he's just adding more, like, you know, he's putting more in his book bag. So when he comes to fight, he's bringing out, you know, MVP, two teams, he's building up his arsenal so the argument can be made. But I always feel like there'll be a handful. The Bradys, you know, there's a lot of names that. So my thing is, if your name can be mentioned, then you're good to go. Like, we're not going to mention Donovan McNabb. We're not going to mention Donovan McNabb, so he's not good to go.
He's bad to go.
Yo, did you just try and throw me an alley-oop so that I take a shot? We're going to keep this positive.
Don't dunk that. Let's congratulate these Hall of Fame cats, man.
Yo, congratulations.
I'm going to throw him another alley-oop, man. There's a new Hall of Fame club, man. And that started off with B. Austin's favorite homie, yo. Derrick Brooks is now a Hall of Famer. B.
Austin. Shout out to B. Brooks. I know B. Austin is loving that right there.
Yo, wait. Who did you say, Jimmy? Who's a Hall of Famer now?
Derrick Brooks, not Patrick Willis.
right there behind Uncle Ray, man. Just Derrick Brooks to me.
No, now you're tripping. See, I tried to throw you alley-oop, but you just missed the layup. Right behind Ray Lewis and Derrick Brooks, though, seriously. Anyway.
But Jim,
Are you talking about middle linebackers or are you talking about linebackers?
I'm talking about anything you want to break it down.
Austin, like, when you say he's behind Ray, you saying middle linebacker or you saying linebacker?
Middle. Thank you. Yeah, for that particular position. Not all time.
So you think
right.
Oh, not all time. You're saying what? In this past I'm saying all time at that position.
Not all linebackers at the middle linebacker position.
Oh, okay. Here's what you're saying. You're saying all time at the middle linebacker position, Derrick Brooks is next to Ray Lewis.
Yes.
You're still drunk, yo. Let me just throw the names out there, and anything that stands out about any of these guys, you can just chime in, and we can get back to that debate right there, or we can put that up as a versus or whatever you want to on the page. But
that's a debate to have on the show. We don't have that long today.
Yeah, no doubt, it's a short show. So some of the names are Michael Strahan, Walter Jones, of course, Derrick Brooks, Andre Reed, who Dev just talked about the other day, and kind of disrespected a little bit. Aeneas Williams.
For what?
Ray Guy.
Underrated.
And Claude Humphrey. Any thoughts?
Well, if Ray Guy is going to get in, then I deserve to be in as well.
But truthfully, Ray Guy and Claude Humphrey, yo, Ray and Claude, that sound like the Life movie. Ray Guy and Claude Humphrey, they got in by the Veterans Committee. So, you know, once your eligibility is way up, I think the old heads can get together and give you a sympathy vote.
Ray Guy's
the first ever puncher in the Hall of Fame, though. So, you know, he got to get shut up.
Anyone that kicks the ball isn't really a football player.
I think they could be Hall of Famers for what they do. I've seen some punters do some things with the Rock. So.
And I've also seen some punters lose some games. So if you can,
you can distinguish between the good and the bad punters. Michael Strahan, he's a beast. Single season back record, even if he got help. Walter Jones, arguably the greatest offensive lineman ever. Derrick Brooks, we always talk about him. He's a beast. Andre Reed is somebody who had to wait a long time. Aeneas Williams, one of Donovan McNabb's favorite targets in big games. I think because there was some people were talking about snubs, and I heard a lot of people say Charles Haley probably should have got in before Michael Strahan. I heard Marvin Harrison should have got in over Andre Reed. I think I could agree with the Haley thing a little more than the Andre Reed thing. Reed has been waiting for a long time, and even though Marvin Harrison's numbers does kind of dwarf his, Reed should have been in a long time ago. It shouldn't even have come to that. So I think with that one, you know, he just had to wait for the logjam at receiver to loosen up a little bit. They put him in. I think Marvin will probably get him on his next turn, even though, you know, I think if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. I don't like this first ballot, second ballot, eighth ballot.
Right.
What I was saying is you mentioned something that a lot of people do, and I know why you do it, but it's just interesting how when the Veterans Committee lets somebody in, it's like, yeah, you know, we gave them a sympathy vote and things like that. It's crazy because these guys are still Hall of Famers, but they get pooped on.
it's like some old heads we forgot about, man. We got to put them in, you know.
Have y'all been following Warren Sapp and Strahan kind of going back and forth? They started
that
one in last year. And I'm going to say to me that Strahan is and gets overrated. I'm on the fence about him being in the Hall of Fame. I know he was a dominant player, and I probably think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but I still think that he's overrated. People weren't as afraid of Strahan as they were of Haley. Like, Cap didn't want to play because Haley was lined up. Like, he was a poor, poor man's LT. Like, Strahan wasn't feared like that, I don't believe.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, man. I'm going to end on this. I agree with you. He's definitely overrated, probably because that fraud of a quarterback gave him that stupid record, which is ridiculous to begin with. So, he's a popular guy.
MVP, dude.
He's a safe Negro. He's a cornball brother, so America loves him. But he's definitely overrated as a football player. And I'm gonna leave it at that.
But is he good? Is he good though, Jimmy? Is he good?
He's good. I'm not gonna say. I'm honest. I'm honest. He's
Hall
a good
of Fame
player.
Not good.
Hall of Famer and being a good player are two different things. You know what I'm saying? And also, he played on that front four where he got a lot of single. He wasn't double teamed a lot. You know what I'm saying?
So his front four was nice. Yeah, his unit was nice.
Yeah. So let's move on, though, because this is a short show. We got to do some Super Bowl, talk about the Super Bowl a little bit. So before we jump into that, Dev, tell everybody how to get in touch with us.
No doubt. Everybody, check out our website, warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about the company, the show, and inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us, info@warroomsports.com. So make sure you browse the site. Click on everything you see. Take your time, all that kind of stuff. But look, we'll definitely be taking calls in about 2 minutes. The Digital Stream Tech Hotline, that number is 323-410-0012. And if you want to join us in the chat room right now, that's blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. We want to hear from you guys and get your Super Bowl picks in. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to do that, you can sign up through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, just click follow so you can get reminders about the show. So go ahead, put your questions and posts on Facebook, Twitter, in the chat room right now, or you can call in again, 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. But we do want to hear from you guys and get your opinion on the Super Bowl and your picks. All right, so this Super Bowl talk for our pregame tailgate show is brought to you by Dr. Monique Rowell of Alexandria Podiatry Associates for the best and comprehensive treatment to injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities. Visit Dr. Monique Rowell of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area and beyond. Visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. Make sure you tell them War Room Sports sent you. All right, let's talk a little bit about the big game. That's what we're here for. Much was made about the potential weather because it's basically the first cold weather Super Bowl. Maybe not the first, but they hadn't done that in a long time. But game time temperature is said to be around 44 degrees with only 4 mile per hour winds. So I think the big deal that everybody made about the weather, it's not going to come to fruition. That's probably good for Jimmy being a Broncos fan. They don't have to deal with the elements. I think I'm kind of pulling for the Broncos too. But in any other situation, I wanted it to be a blizzard. Like, I wanted them to stop all this and know better next time. But do you guys think the weather that, since it's 44 degrees and it's only going to be light winds, does this favor any one of these teams, do you guys think?
Of course. I don't know. Of course. I think it favors Denver. We know what Denver likes to do. It just opens the playbook up that much further if they're able to go down the field with intermediate routes. If you got high winds, let me offer this disclaimer. I never thought temperature was a big deal. All I think that really matters is, number one, wind, and number two, precipitation. Cold doesn't matter. You get millions and millions of dollars. These dudes are mentally strong. They can go out and play in minus 10 if there's no wind. But if it could be 60 degrees, if the wind is blowing, that affects what you can do down the field in your passing attack. So I think the wind is the biggest factor.
So are you saying that Denver would have just been the favorite anyway? Because this is the type of weather where, really it's suitable for both teams. What Seattle does, they can do in any weather, I think. I think weather would have favored them. I don't necessarily think good weather, goes against them, but you're just saying Denver, what they do is just better.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And also for the other side of the ball, I think in bad weather, you would have seen Russell Wilson throw the ball probably 3 times a quarter for 12 passing attempts, and now you may see him make about 16 passing attempts.
Yo, man, all I want to say is, I think that Bjarsson pretty much, said everything there is to say about this topic in terms of the weather. It definitely favors them because they're a passing team. It's very simple. It's not complex. Seattle likes to run the ball, play great defense, and have their game manager not make mistakes. Denver likes to spread them out, 5 wide, and throw the football. So, therefore, it's obvious. The weather, hey, Dev, is this a real question? Like, I'm joking. but it definitely favors Denver, though.
This is a real question. DJ, what? There's a lot going around, you know, the Super Bowl about experience. Seattle really only has one player who's been in the Super Bowl, but he's not a player of any, you know, circumstance.
Yeah.
I mean, Cardale Lockett, he's a receiver and a special teamer who actually got with San Francisco last year after Seattle cut him, and he just happened to be on the team when they went to the Super Bowl. He didn't really do anything. And their coach, Ken Norton Jr., their linebackers coach, of course, he won three straight Super Bowls, two with the Cowboys, one with the Niners back in the 90s. Now, on Denver's side of the ball, John Fox, their head coach, has been to two, one as a coordinator, one as a head coach. He hasn't won any. Peyton Manning has been to two. He's 1-1. DRC, Wes Welker, and Jacob Tammy have all played in Super Bowls. But, PJ, do you buy into the whole experience matters when it comes to a game like this, or does that not even matter?
To be honest with you, I don't know that it matters enough to be instrumental in the game. I mean, I think it can help. I understand what they go through with the two-week layoff and the preparation and the focus and the media and all that could be distracting. But I think that in this particular game, especially the way the Seattle is playing, right, they're playing like a team with a chip on their shoulders. They're very focused. A lot of them, it's the first time they've been to an NFC Championship game last 2 weeks ago. So I don't think that it's going to be enough to influence the game. I don't think it trumps talent. I don't think it trumps preparedness and a team that is focused and, you know, looking, you know, on a mission, if you will. So I do believe it helps. I think it helps sometimes maybe with scheduling, with throughout the week and being where you need to be and understanding all the hoopla and not getting caught up in it. But I think when the ball is kicked off, I don't think that experience in that particular game will trump a team that's prepared and has the talent to get it done.
Yo, that is exactly what I was about to say, that second part that you said, because I thought you were just going to leave it on the first part. I was about to say I think it only matters, you know, it gives you a sense of how to handle all of the hoopla prior to the game. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, you know, you know how to handle it. The next time you go to the Super Bowl, you know, like, yeah, the first time I was a little hype and we did a little too much. And so, yeah, like,
that's
next time,
right.
Maybe Lynch will say five more sentences to the media next time.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
you know, he's got to say a little more than I'm about that action, boss. But, I think you're absolutely right.
My take on that is you're all professionals and just about that action, boss. You know.
Yeah,
that,
I mean, it's football. It's what they do all the time.
Yeah.
So once the ball is kicked off, they're in their comfort zone. That's what they do.
It may matter at some point early in the first quarter for younger players. There may be some jitters. But by the second quarter, all of that is gone. All that's gone. And by the second half of the game, it's just another game that they're going, you know, all out for to get a victory. You know, I don't think it really, the game itself, the preparation, a little different. You have two major organizations that have moved their stuff, one from the West Coast, one from the middle of the country. All operations are moved to the East Coast, so that may have a bearing in terms, but that's not even the players. That's more so the coaching staff and the support personnel. You know, logistics, how do you work logistics in a place that you've never been before? But as you guys said, as far as the players, same sentiments that PJ just expressed.
All right, well, let's go. We got a call on the Digital Exchange Tech hotline. We're going to go to New York. We're going to go near the Super Bowl site to Lenny in New York. What's up, Lenny?
Yeah,
you know,
I said I was from New York, but now I'm not sure if I'm from New Jersey. It's confusing. New York, I think I'm in New York. But somebody told me I'm also in New Jersey, so I can't figure out where I'm from. I have two zip codes now, and it's driving me crazy because I got to mail a letter. All right, so anyway, I'm a little disappointed, not just in your cover. You guys are now covering the jitters, and that's really going really deep. I mean, I know that if Denver, because I've heard a lot of Super Bowl coverage. I've even done some myself. And I'll tell you something. If Denver wants to win, and – see if you agree with me on this. They have to run the football. They have to hold on to the football. They have to avoid third and long. They got to control the tempo of the game. They got to keep Wilson off the field. The line must protect the quarterback. The receivers, no, this is important. The receivers must run good routes, and the receivers must hold on to the ball. And the teams, you know, Seattle has to avoid stupid penalties. The defense has to stop the run, otherwise they're going to run. They must rush Wilson. They can't let receivers get open. They got to avoid turnovers. And the defense must be relentless in pursuit. Has to be. But the key is, and I want to ask you guys this question, which team is going to be more physical?
Lenny, you, sir, are a master of the cliche.
No kidding. The whole thing, you're talking about the jitters. All right, so let's put it this way, guys. I know that all this stuff is all – hey, listen, which line is going to control the trenches, all right? Special teams have – I got more than – I got more. I kind of let you guys off the hook. But there's so much talk about which teams are going to be more physical. Can I ask you one question? You could all give me the answer. Have you ever seen a football game that wasn't physical?
That's the nature of the game. That's pretty much it.
So, listen, I've been watching Super Bowls since Len Dawson, Emmett Thomas, Bobby Bell, Willie Wood, Jim Taylor, Henry Jordan, all those guys. You know, the Packers and with Max McGee scoring all the touchdowns and the whole thing. I'm a football fan from way back. So I'm going to tell you that listen to me very carefully, and then here's what I want you to do. After you hear what I say, I want you to go to the movies for the all right, and have a good night. You don't even have to watch the game. There's no need to watch the game after hearing what I got to say, and here it is very carefully. Are you ready? You want to write this down so you can report about it after the game? Here's the thing. Peyton Manning's going to come out swinging. There's not going to be any feeling out process by Denver. You know, the feeling out, everybody runs the ball for a series of downs just to get the goose. None of that stuff. He's going for it. In the first series, he's going to throw one deep pass. By the second possession, it's going to be 7-0. Denver's then going to kick a field goal and make it 10-0. Eric Decker is going to make it 17-0, and the crowd's going to wonder why he paid so much to see a blowout. Then Bruno Mars is going to come on at halftime with the score 17-0, and this way we could all take a break. He's from another planet, and we're going to go take care of Uranus at halftime. Then Seattle can't figure out how to crack the Denver defense, but does score a touchdown as Percy Harvin. They didn't even know he was playing, and Harvin's standing in the end zone. I got the ball, so it'll be a 20 – and then Marino's going to score a touchdown, 24-7, and then the Denver defense will continue to stifle Seattle, and the score will be 24-14 with Marshawn Lynch breaking a 14-yard run by accident, and then Manning's going to hit Welker in garbage time. Final score, 31-14. Guys, I would go to the movies this afternoon. It'll be empty. You'll have a good time. You can eat all the popcorn you want, and maybe they'll even give you a discount because you'll be the only ones there. So,
this is between this and our webcast. This is about our fifth show covering the Super Bowl, and a lot of how we had the game going is similar to you because I think all of us actually have Denver winning by double digits. So maybe we can catch a good movie tonight.
Seriously, guys, listen, and I've been listening, and you do a very good job, you guys, and the whole war room. I think there's a bunch of war room. I know Anthony Aniano. I've been on his show a couple of times. Here. He does a war room show, the whole thing. I love listening to Blog Talk Radio. I think it's, I do a lot of other radio, and the point is that when you reach the point of you think you're a big deal, it becomes a very pompous situation. Everybody really thinks they know about. But when you guys break down the jitters, I have not heard one show that has talked about the jitters before, and that could be the case.
Overanalyzation. We have nothing to talk about.
I don't think so. I think that's the thing that we all forget about. I just gave you 20 things to worry about, but I want to ask you one question. And just give me an honest answer. In your opinion, with Seattle, is this a must game?
You said it's a must
for
game?
For Seattle?
A must?
For Seattle,
is it a must game for any team? How are you thinking about that? Is this a must game and you're thinking about it? Give me a break. All right, who wants it more? Can you figure that out? Who wants it more?
Nobody wants it. Everybody wants it.
How many times have you heard analysts say, apparently Denver wanted it more, Seattle wanted it. Who wants it more before the game?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
How would you know?
It's one of those cliches. Yeah. All right, here's the thing before I go, and thanks for giving me extended time. The best radio you could ever hear is listening to, I don't care who it is, it could be Terry Bradshaw, it could be all, it could be the biggest experts in the country, okay? Listen to their analyzation of this game before the game, tape it, and then play it back on Monday, and you'll have the biggest laugh you'll ever have because nobody knows what's going to happen except me.
All right.
All right.
Well,
take it easy, man. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Good show, guys. All keep right. it up the good
okay.
work, and
you,
maybe you could be as big as Adriano. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Lenny from New York, everybody. All right. What were we talking about before? Well, I guess we were talking about,
about
how much experience matters in the game. So, I mean, I think we all pretty much agree that the experience factor probably has more weight in the 2 weeks leading up to the game, how you conduct your business leading up to the game. So let's go over some of our final keys to the game. Actually, Lenny just did a good job of going over some of the keys to the game. But B. Austin, how – let's start with Seattle since they seem to be the underdog, at least on this show. How can Seattle pull this upset and beat Denver?
They must hit the quarterback early and often. This is easier said than done, obviously.
That's why they're just keys. So we just tell people how they could win.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, but hitting Peyton Manning is going to be key. Being able to utilize their coverage to cut those crossing routes out, stacked at different levels. And then lastly, I would say making sure that the mismatches, mainly Thurman, is able to play stout, you know, really, really play stout. And that's on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, Russell Wilson is going to have to make a play. If we as analysts can look at this and know that, you know, he's only going to throw the ball 12 to 18 times and that's not their strength, how much more so does Denver's defensive coordinators understand that? Jack Del Rio is going to dare them to go down the field because they're going to sell out to stop the run. So Russell Wilson and those receivers are going to have to make a play, or two, or three, and that's going
to
be the key.
You're going to have to. I mean, because honestly, like what you said, Austin, is, even if they play well, I think it's going to be important for Seattle to win the battle of the trenches defensively. So I think, like you said, their defensive line is going to have to get some pressure on Peyton. And because if you give Peyton time, even with the excellent defensive backfield that they have, I still think he's going to pick you apart because Peyton is very smart. And they're just going to have to do that. And on the offensive side, I feel like Russell Wilson, Denver's going to score some points. And you know, running is all good, and you know, you can control the game with that. But I think Denver's going to put points up, and Seattle is going to have to score. So it's going to come down to Russell Wilson making, like, 3 to 5 big plays. They're going to be able to compete.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Seattle, of course, they will go into the game with that game plan to try to control the ball on the ground. But if what you just said, you know, rings true, and even with the caller Lenny just said rings true, if Denver jumps out to a big lead, then they're going to have to abandon that a little bit and try to move the ball down so they won't get behind too much. That's where the challenge lies for the Seattle offense. And I do think Denver will run the ball more than people probably expect them to, just to keep the defense off balance, because we all know Seattle is great at creating pressure on quarterbacks, and then they're great at coverage in the secondary. So I think they will use a little bit of Fat Man Montana back there, you know, calling those audibles to get Knowshon Moreno and those other guys involved in the game, just to keep that Legion of Boom honest back there.
Denver goes up, then Marshawn Lynch becomes an ally to Denver. For real, that whole ball control thing, that plays in Denver's favor. My fault, Jimmy, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that I agree pretty much with all you said. It's going to come down to what Russell Wilson can do. And also, one thing people aren't mentioning is the weakness of Seattle's defense, if there is any weakness, is stopping the run. So they're going to mix that in there.
Maybe I probably wouldn't term it as a weakness, but it is the weakest link in their chain. But their chain is very strong on most.
Yeah, they got a diesel chain. They got one of them umbilical cord chains. But yeah, it's still a weak, you know.
But I mean, even though they're the number one defense, you know, you don't play the number one offense every week. And
yeah, even being a number one defense, they're not even in the top five against the run. They're like just so far and away good against the pass that it propels them to number one overall. But in terms of stopping the run, you're not even in the top five.
And for how tough they are, you know, you don't play against the number one record-setting offense every week. So, you know, their defense could possibly get exposed a little bit this evening. But at the same time, you know, if those guys have the game of their lives, then you know, maybe they can do something to shut down that Bronco attack. But we'll see. We'll definitely see. As far as pressure on the quarterback, you know, there's some amazing statistics at how much Denver and Peyton Manning avoid pressure. And I think a lot of it has to do with the quickness of his release. You definitely have to give the offensive linemen some credit there as well. But, you know, they seem to try to neutralize teams that are known for their pass rush, and it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic works out. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I do think the Broncos will win and possibly win big, but I don't think I'm ready yet to buy those movie tickets. I think I'm gonna stay here and see what happens.
Definitely. If there's a weakness on the Seattle defense, I think this Denver team can find it. I mean, if there is one, I'm not saying that there's a real weakness. I know they're stronger in obviously against the pass and the other run, but if there's a weakness, I would take my chances with this Denver team to find that weakness with Peyton. So that's right. Why that to me, that's what's also going to make it a great game to watch.
And Austin, to a point that you made earlier, I know you can't bank on this, but you said, you know, if Denver goes up, then Marshawn Lynch becomes an ally. I don't know. I've seen them get into a little bit of trouble and still stay committed to the run because Marshawn Lynch is prone to break a big one, you know, every now and again. So he's not the type of running back, and that's not the type of running game that you would totally have to abandon because sometimes that's how they score. If Russell Wilson is not going, you know, they stick with the run and beast mode ends up breaking something. You know, I could possibly change momentum and get them back into the game. I've seen it happen before, but this is a different beast, man. I'm very anxious to see this offense go up against this defense. Like, rarely do we have two number ones going at it in the biggest game of the season. So, hey, what more can we ask for?
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
Yeah, so,
yeah, man, so with that being said, I'm just excited to get it going, man, because, you know, this would be a bittersweet day for me. Team could win the Super Bowl. I'm also looking forward, win or lose, to see the Peyton Manning conversation after the game, because win or lose, there will be Peyton Manning conversations. We know what those will be, win or lose, and I'm looking forward to seeing that thing.
As I always say, man, the way people talk about Peyton, you wouldn't think that he's already won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, because of that, a lot of people honestly have forgotten. When you talk to them, they say, oh, yeah, he damn sure did. Like, you know.
But that's because they're used to just falling in line with all the criticism and, you know, they just follow what they hear.
Yo, the hate is real.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of those polarizing figures. There's both sides. He has crazy love and he has crazy hate. So
yeah, he has cats who want to vote him for defensive player of the year, like B. Austin. So you know, it works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it does work both ways. But I'm just interested to see how those conversations go because that to me would be the biggest story of this game after the fact.
Man,
and also
I credit people.
And then Richard Sherman hit too because if Richard Sherman has a bad game after everything that he's been through, oh my God, they're gonna light into him. So
yeah, if Demarius lights that ass on fire, it's gonna be a lot.
Yeah,
tough.
Yeah, gonna light into him. And B. Austin, to your point, B. Austin, we know that Tebow was he had to go in order for this to happen. He had to sacrifice the Virgin.
Yeah, Tebow sacrificed himself. So this is all.
Yo, boy.
So this is where we at.
Nigga said he's taking the playoff sacrifice.
Everybody, who I guess we could just go down the line. If we had to name one X factor on both teams, who would be the X factor? Like, who has the potential? Who has the potential?
I'll start it off because everybody knows what I'm going to say, baby. It's all about Pop Roast straight out of Temple University in Philadelphia.
If he can help them control beast mode.
Pretty much, because when Pot Rose plays well and our run defense plays well, we're a different team. We have games where, you know, they don't play well. It's like on and off with our run defense. But when they play well, it's when we put teams to bed, like, early. Like, it's when we sing 50 on people and blow them out back because our run defense is able to come in and get a couple early stops. That changes the complexion of every game.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, that.
What about on the other side? What about Seattle? Who has the potential to be their expert?
Yeah, their quarterback. I know that sounds crazy, right?
Now I know what my B. Austin always says that. Like, yo, you can't go second talking with y'all dudes because all your points will be stolen.
How bad is it when your quarterback is your X-factor, though?
Yeah, that I feel the same way because it's like Russell, usually with the quarterback position, especially when you get to a point like the Super Bowl, you know exactly what you're going to get from your quarterback. So, you know, somebody else becomes that X-factor. We need a big game from this guy in order to win. But on Seattle, I do think, like, the defense is going to battle. They're not going to shut Denver down like they shut everybody else down, but they're still going to battle. You know what you're going to get from them. You know what you're going to get from the running game if they stay committed to it. But Russell Wilson, he's been a different guy. You know, first half of the season, he was pretty good. Late in the season, he started tapering off, and in the playoffs, sometimes he just downright looks scared. So, you know, if he can come out and surprise some people with his play, he could definitely be an X-factor on the Seattle side. And on Denver's side, I don't know, man. We talked about it last week. It has to be somebody in the middle of that field. So I'm thinking either Julius Thomas or Wes Welker controlling the middle of that field. You guys know my word, east-west route runners, to control the game because we know what Seattle's secondary can do if you try to go vertical. So I'm thinking the guys, you know, going across the middle, either a Wes Welker or a Julius Thomas.
Usually the way that Denver chooses to try and expose weakness is to utilize Julius Thomas and find a mismatch, and Wes Welker, find a mismatch on that second level, which is the linebackers. So the question that I would look to is Bobby Wagner and those guys, what do they look like lined up against Julius Thomas and Wes Welker, or how are you walking your safeties down in Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor to take that pressure off of the linebackers in covering the middle of the field and inside the hashes? Because I think that's where the weakness is with Seattle. The X factor, Jimmy, you make a great point about Pot Roast. When teams can score and have success against Denver, it obviously gives them a chance to win. When there's a lot of three and outs and Denver's defense is standing up, it's very difficult to hold Denver to a low point total. Even if you have marginal success at various points in the game, they're going to explode for two and three scores at a time on multiple occasions throughout that game. And so if you control the tempo, you control the run for Seattle, the question becomes, where is their point coming from? Where is their scoring coming from? And so I just don't see where Seattle is going to be able to score enough points to keep pace with Denver. And then you can be the greatest secondary in the world. Shout out to Richard Sherman. Definitely a fan. Earl Thomas, best safety in the game. But you can't cover forever. And so this just favors Peyton and Denver, I believe. I mean, I know that Seattle is a great defense, but they've never run up against an offense like this. This favors Denver defense.
You got X-factors, PJ?
Yeah, I would just say real quick, for me on the Denver side, I would say, because it is hard because you guys made some great points, I would say also no Sean Moreno and maybe the offensive line of Denver can maybe effective enough to suck Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas down into the box because they're, you know, busting off decent runs and being successful in the run game.
That's
to create those favorable matchups for, you know, for Peyton and for the Broncos and, you know, for the Thomases out in the secondary. And then I'd say, like I said earlier on the Seattle side, it really comes back to Russell Wilson, man. If he can't make three big plays at least, forget about it. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I mean,
that's a great point.
Denver,
because if Moshon starts going off, it's going to be a long night.
Like, we have our thoughts, but actually, I think Denver's on, they're like less than a 2-point favorite. So, you know, it seems like, you know, Vegas, for one, they think that it's going to be an epic Super Bowl. And I've heard that word,
I think,
I've said a few
I
times.
Think the
so,
odds,
they're trying to
I
get,
think the odds makers, I think the odds makers are a little bit different than Jimmy. I think that they're showing Seattle a measure of respect that they've earned and they deserve, as opposed to coming in and just saying, well, they can't score points, so Denver could end up putting up a 40
listen,
burger.
Man,
on
listen,
them.
Man, that's not about respect.
Yo,
the odds makers are trying to get people to bet one way. That's how the line is generated. It has nothing to do with the respect.
Okay.
But everybody bets one way. They try to get them to shift, so they move the line. That's all it is.
Well,
they're trying to get the bets where they want.
You've been dissing Seattle like, yeah, I think that Denver's going to put up a 40-piece on them. A 40-piece. Like,
well, we're at that point. So, Austin, give us your pick and what you think the score will be.
You know, I'm riding with Montana Fat Man, Hurry Hurry, Omaha. So, Peyton Manning, really want to see Champ get a chip. So, Denver for me, I think the score is going to be 27. That's the score.
15.
27-17, excuse me.
Yeah. PJ, what you got?
Yep, I got Denver winning. I got Denver 31, Seattle 20.
31-20. All right,
yeah.
Jimmy, what do you got?
I got Denver 41, Seattle 20.
Damn. The blowout is in effect. I'm going to go with a weird score. I don't know how they're going to get 18 points. But I'm going to go Denver 30, Seattle 18. So it doesn't look like anybody in the war room has much confidence in what Seattle's doing. And I don't want it to sound like that because I have a lot of respect for this team. It's basically, for me, I'm just not sure I'm all the way sold on the quarterback. And I'm not saying him moving on in the future. He is only a second-year guy. I'm not sure if he's ready for the stage yet, but he has the biggest stage in sports right now to prove us wrong, and they're going to kick it off in a few hours, and we'll see what he's going to do. But those are our Super Bowl predictions. This has been our Super Bowl tailgate. Jimmy, take us out of here.
Absolutely, good brother. Listen, man, thanks for joining us for our Super Bowl tailgate, good folks. Shout out to people in the chat room. Those on Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, shout out to the call we got, you know, talking about what's going to happen today and how we should go get movie tickets. You know, I think we'll stay and watch the game, but we get your point. Tune in at our regular day and time on Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. for another episode of The War Room. We'll recap Super Bowl 48 and discuss everything else in the world of sports. So until then, enjoy the big game and the sports week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Be sure to catch our conversations on Facebook, Twitter, and all of our video content, which is at warroomsportstv.com. Holler at us on the bowl on the Facebook page as well as Twitter. And until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We'll see you chumps on top. Then oh well, yeah.
physical podcast, let's pump push. Showtime like magic in the block push. Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip-hop dollars, pit-stop knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, Royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast, you better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.